Today, a conversation on data centers, public subsidies, and the future of economic development in El Paso. In late 2023, with little fanfare, the city and county governments in El Paso gave generous subsidies to Meta Platforms, the parent company of Instagram, Facebook, and WhatsApp, in exchange for the tech giant spending a lot of money to build a data center in Northeast El Paso. The incentives the city and county gave to Meta mostly include an 80% break on property taxes for decades and $12.5 million to repair the road infrastructure immediately around the data center. As I look back, the data center deal escaped major scrutiny. Maybe the artificial intelligence boom and related data center buildout weren't as frenzied and as much of a topic at this time 2 years ago. In truth, it's something I look back on as a miss on my part as a reporter. And local organizers and even people working in our local governments have also told me the deal with Meta flew under their radars as well. Now, in late 2025, the topic of data centers in the borderland is among the major issues facing our region, maybe the biggest one. To supporters of Meta's data center deal, the company's $1.5 billion investment here is a huge victory, something that will boost the tax base in El Paso and have one of the world's biggest companies establish a footprint in our city. Even with the tax breaks in place, the city's economic development department has said Meta will still be paying millions of dollars in local taxes annually over the life of the deal, and the data center is expected to employ 100 workers. But to critics, the subsidies are a handout from a low-income city to a mega corporation that doesn't need to be subsidized and that will come here and consume, on average, hundreds of thousands of gallons of water per day. For perspective, Meta generated a profit of $2.7 billion in the 3 months spanning from July through September, and the company is sitting on a $44 billion cash pile. I'm Diego Mendoza Moyers, a reporter with El Paso Matters. And for this episode of the El Paso Matters podcast, I'll be talking with Andy Vargas, a veteran of the technology and finance industries and a managing partner of the venture capital firm No Border Ventures. Data centers appear to be an increasingly integral part of our local government's plan to improve El Paso's economy and job market. But Andy has been critical of the subsidies that local governments awarded Meta, and he shares his thoughts on what the future of economic development in El Paso should look like. I do want to note that the topic of data centers' water and electricity consumption is important, and we didn't touch on that in detail in this podcast. But check out elpasomatters.org to read a story we're publishing about Meta's water usage, which El Paso Water estimates could average 400,000 gallons of water per day. And before I bring Andy on, I want to mention that this El Paso Matters podcast episode is brought to you by our podcast title sponsor, Tani Acosta and Chaparro, truck crash and injury attorneys. Their team of local, seasoned trial attorneys are ready to help if you've been injured in a crash. We're also sponsored by the Greater El Paso Association of Realtors. If you're looking for a realtor or for a property to buy or rent, visit elpasotx.com. And you can sign up for El Paso Matters free newsletter and read our reporting on data centers and many other topics at our website, elpasomatters.org. While you're there, you can also sign up for the inaugural El Paso Matters 9.15K run on December 7th. Registration for the run is open through December 6th. Now, on to our conversation. Andy, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So before we start, can you just share a little bit about your background and who you are and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a 17th generation Tejano. I'm also a first generation college graduate who grew up on the East Side and who was raised by a hardworking family. My mother worked for one of the most iconic manufacturing companies in the 80s, 70s, 80s, for El Paso, back when manufacturing existed and when fabricas existed on this side of town, of the country, of the line. She worked for FADA.
Okay.
She worked for FADA for 25 years. And I attribute a lot of her work with, you know, basically her entire life, career, to FADA, because it shaped how I thought about economic development and how I thought about the impact that a big company can do for the community. It also, you know, helped me understand more about workers' rights and much of what a binational company, you know, is all about. And much of what manufacturing once was to the United States, I am noticing a renaissance of manufacturing, of American dynamism. You know, I wrote a piece for El Paso Matters, which talks more about that. And as I've moved back, right, after 15 years of being away to El Paso, you know, away from El Paso, this has very much influenced, you know, how I've gotten involved with the community and how I think and my perspective. I graduated with a master's last year, and I returned to El Paso, my hometown, and I co-founded No Border Ventures, which focuses in investing in the Southwest and also in creating regional competitiveness. And my background in those 15 years has been a combination of energy trading, investment banking, capital markets, cloud infrastructure at AWS, and now venture plus civic involvement in the Borderplex. And I also have served and have had the privilege of serving as in the Regional Renewable Energy Council. I've worked with data center adjacent companies, and I've mentored tech founders all over the country and in Latin America. And today I help train some of, you know, the top AI labs in the world as a finance expert. So all that to say, Diego, I'm very much interested in, you know, how do we make sure that the Southwest, right, isn't just a place where AI gets built, but a place where our people share in the upside.
Yeah, and I appreciate you going through that. You have kind of an interesting background, which is why I wanted to talk to you about, you know, this data center issue and this, you know, development of AI and so forth that we're seeing here.
Yeah.
I guess just to get into it, I mean, can you share your general perspective on particularly the Meta data center that's, you know, coming here to Northeast El Paso and, you know, what you make of it both as a project and also the deal that, you know, the incentive deal that the city and county agreed to with Meta. Curious for your thoughts on that. And I'll just add, I think it's an interesting project because I think that there's a really massive gap between the perception of our elected officials and you know, sort of developers and so forth versus just the public that I think has a fairly negative view of it. And so
yeah.
It's been interesting to see that gap. And so I'm curious your thoughts on the project generally.
Yeah, absolutely. And before I jump into answering your question, I will say that, you know, these opinions are my own, and they in no way are representative of any organizations or companies that I am affiliated with.
Sure.
And so, but with that said, I think it's very important to keep context of how this deal originated before we jump into more of the, you know, more on the details. But this deal was in largely part made by a previous city manager and a previous mayor and city council, DeMargo at the time. And also enlarged by Governor Abbott, who at the time, you know, we can think of where, as tech companies approached the state of Texas, you know, where did they want to place? And, you know, enlarged, he had a big, you know, he had a big effort to move these place, you know, these data centers west of Texas. And so we found, you know, as we found data centers in Abilene and Midland in that region, we found one in El Paso. But the truth is that city officials love these deals, right? But the public doesn't. And both sides aren't necessarily wrong. I do think that they're just talking about different outcomes. And the question doesn't necessarily become whether or not data centers will be built. The question is how they will be built and where. And those answers can be driven largely by utility commissioners, and we can delve into that. I think we have an outdated policy that could, if updated, could largely benefit the tax rate, you know, the taxpayer at large. We can delve into that later. But I do believe that cities grow through diversified industries. And as we talk about the Meta data center, El Paso shouldn't chase the deal, right? I think that the deal should meet El Paso's standards and every city's standards. And so the city is seeing the promise, clearly the promise of investment but the public is feeling the pressure on resources, right? And understandably so. And so how do you reconcile the two, right? How do you prepare what I think is the next phase? The data center is coming, right? But how do we prepare the community for what's to come? I think that becomes the bigger question, right? And data centers can absolutely help a region, right? They can expand the tax base, they can modernize the grid, they can signal that a community is ready to compete in AI, in the AI economy, but they also come with real costs. They strain power, they require water, and the benefits only materialize. They only materialize if they are structured well and if these deals are negotiated well. So I think the key is not to be for or against them. I think the question here is to be more thoughtful, right? And tie the incentives to actual performance, require companies to fund their infrastructure, prioritize efficiencies throughout the data centers, and make sure that the community sees the real value, not just the headlines, and not just some of the leaders praising, a data center and a big name company coming to town. There's more things that should be touched upon, but it's important to understand what are they, and I think a lot of the public may have different versions of what they believe, but for the El Paso people, data centers, as someone who has worked, at one of the last roles that I held, responsibilities at Amazon and at AWS, was the location, the co-location, the design, and the valuation of data centers. What are data centers? Well, they're warehouse-like facilities, right, that house computing, and they house networking equipment. Probably every website that you, Diego, and every other El Pasoan uses, anywhere from social media to Netflix to ordering groceries, if you do, to using a website, any website, that all is hosted through data centers, right? And they generally have very special infrastructure for cooling, for high throughput networking, for fire suppression, and reliable power delivery. And some data centers are the size of large data centers, or the size of large warehouses, that is. And some are small as just a floor in an office building. And then there's some much bigger ones, hyperscalers, some that, we will be seeing around the state line of New Mexico and Texas rather soonish, and others built around around the country. I mean, you look at Midland, the West Texas region, and what Stargate is doing. But I will touch on these two sides, why the praise exists. And well, it's because Meta brings large capital expenditures, right? In this case, $1.5 billion. Typically, they do an average about $2 to $5 billion, and data centers pay for what? Construction wages. The cities rely heavily on the headlines to show momentum. And El Paso has one of the cheapest grid lines, electric, grids in the country. And certainly in Texas, we benefit from the fact that we don't share our grid with the rest of Texas, with ERCOT, that is.
Sure.
We have our own independent grid, and well, that's an upside to infrastructure development. Jobs, especially not necessarily software jobs, but the full-time jobs that they, that they bring to data centers are mostly in IT, and they're mostly in energy management, right? And to some degree, tax base, to some degree. And I say that because there's a place in Virginia called Loudoun County, where they're the prime example of how data centers now generate 50% of the county's property tax revenue. and they allowing basically large municipal benefits like those to effectively lower the tax rate. However, as we all know, that only benefits homeowners. It doesn't benefit the lower class and the lower class renters who are still, you know, on the hook for a living situation. But that's a different story. And there's a reason why it's called Data Center Alley, right? It's a cluster of data centers. That's not El Paso's story. And so now what I want to touch upon is it's the public frustration, right? Residents feel like they're giving up tax breaks to companies that don't hire locals and drive electricity prices up. Certainly so.
Or need tax breaks, right? These high value, you know, companies generating a lot of, you know, profit and so forth.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And there's also a point of taxpayer exposure from incentive management, right? That's important. And there's a misalignment there. Whereas, you know, Virginia, you know, the example that I just brought in earlier is now proposing a 14-year customer contract to prevent exactly the type of public risk, signaling that earlier deals may have been overly generous. And new state revenue for every dollar spent on the exemption, well, it turns out that you lose more than you gain. And that's true. You know, there have been numerous studies that show that providing largely sized tax abatements, or synonymously tax exemptions, result in a loss for communities. Water and power stress in hot, arid regions like El Paso is very real. In this case, I know, and I don't know very much of the details, you know, I wasn't part of the negotiations or have read any of the documents, but I do understand that it's running on a closed loop system. In a closed loop system, you typically just fill up once, right? And the data center is able to treat the water, recycle the water, you know, and use it once again. Yes, and I'd say, you know, there's pros, you know, there's definitely pros and cons, a little bit more pros that, you know, you're only able to fill it up once, but people should be wary. You know, I think the most important part is the makeup rate, the rate at which, you know, essentially with the hot summer days, you know, some of that evaporation that happens inside these buildings, any building, the makeup water that is being used, right? And as we know, these data centers use millions of water, you know, of water usage. And El Paso, I mean, as you know, El Paso receives 50% of their water through their annual allocation through the, you know, through Colorado and through northern New Mexico, and it flows into, you know, into our city, into our infrastructure here, and the rest is done through basins like the Waco and the Mesilla aquifers, right? We also benefit from the fact that we have a state-of-the-art treatment facility, right? I've had the opportunity to visit the treatment center, and it's quite impressive. But there's still more work to do. There's still more infrastructure updating that, you know, needs to be done here. Even if we have some of the cheapest electricity prices per kilowatt, you know, in the country, there are still many other projects. Meta, Alphabet, Microsoft, ByteDance, X, and Snap, you know, they spent just on data center alone $61.5 million on lobbying in 2024.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a 13% increase from the year prior.
To overcome public backlash.
Exactly. Yeah. And data centers aren't necessarily job creators in abundance. Right, like the data center itself, it's the tertiary and the adjacent industries that are, right? And what made us facility, this data center is maybe going to have 15 to 20 full-time jobs expected here in El Paso. But, you know, every tech company unless it's strictly carved out, a lot of those jobs become remote. And a lot of those jobs are filled by out-of-towners. That's the reality. They won't necessarily be, you know, filled by local El Pasoans. That's a big frustration, of course, for the El Paso people and the people of the North who reside in the Northeast. I think that there should also be a policy on reform by commissioners, utility commissioners, where that regulatory mindset needs to evolve, where they allow utilities not to just be cost centers, but to be strategic partners, right, in enabling the digital economy infrastructure. And I think, you know, Paso Electric, it has done a good job. There's a fund that's able to, you know, to fund and provide capital to many of the city's needs, but we need more of that, right? And that is another topic which I'm happy to cover another time. But, you know, another example, one more example is like Nebraska. You know, Nebraska is learning from Virginia's examples. A lot of data centers going into Nebraska. Now, the state of Nebraska is requiring large industrial customers to pay for their own substations and other infrastructure, as Google did with the Lincoln data center. So, you know, these data centers, there's a reason why the public is very frustrated. I mean, they require massive amounts of electricity. Data centers are expected to triple their energy usage in a few years by 2028. And ERCOT's 2031 forecast has jumped to 218 gigawatts, right? That's half of U.S. daily demand. Well, let's think about it for a second. Well, that's, you know, it's the enormity of the situation. And 1 gigawatt, for perspective, 1 gigawatt is enough to power 250,000 Texas homes in a hot summer day, okay? My last point here, just on the public frustration, and as I, you know, I weigh in on this deal. Well, there's a problem between capacity keeping up, demand keeping up with capacity, right? And there's, with data centers being built across the United States, we are entering a very outdated electricity grid. There's going to be a lot of updates and, you know, of course, restorations and repairs, but we've been seeing power outages, right? And perhaps it's not anything new, but the more we operate as consumers on the cloud and through computing, the more it interrupts services. You know, it's interrupted, power outages have interrupted the services of many companies and Fortune 100 companies, right? Because we rely on supercomputing and because we rely in this type of technology. And lastly, inflation, prices, right? Inflation, the inflation engine of the 21st century wasn't oil, it's compute. Mm-hmm. So even if AI firms pay for connection fees, the ripple effects inflate steel, they inflate transformer and capital across the system. And some say that data centers might even lower electricity by spreading fixed costs, but that logic belonged to the 2010s, you know, two decades ago, when the grid had more capacity. It simply doesn't anymore.
Yeah, no, that's a comprehensive answer. And I'll just on the electricity point, I thought it was really interesting is El Paso Electric kind of set up this special rate for Meta's data center. And of course, El Paso Electric has said consistently that, you know, all of the costs that, that are created by Meta showing up here, that, that they're covering them and they're paying El Paso Electric for every bit of infrastructure. And the PUC, or, you know, one of the public utility commissioners, made this point that, you know, why, like, that there's a concern that potentially, you know, El Paso Electric builds all this stuff to serve Meta and the substations and poles and wires and so forth. And then, you know, El Paso Electric charges the rest of us for it, right? Yeah. And so the PUC flagged that and said, hey, you have to provide, you know, evidence in some form that, you know, ratepayers aren't subsidizing Meta. So it's interesting that that's a real key concern about, hey, you know, we want to welcome data centers, but do it in a way where you're ensuring that the costs are borne by the company that's building it. I guess I'm just curious your thoughts generally on the kind of the AI development race we're seeing. And it's interesting how we've, you know, El Paso, this isolated city, has sort of landed within this frenzy, right, of AI with Meta, but also this Project Jupiter that's part of the Stargate initiative, right, that's OpenAI and Oracle just across the state line here. Correct. And so, but just curious with your experience and just kind of your thoughts on the really big race that we're seeing with the AI development.
Yes, I mean, I think on the macro side, you know, we are in the middle, or the beginning innings of a running race against two major superpowers, the United States and China. And I think it's important to keep that into context, because the first power to find the breakthrough into supercomputing will hold a lot of power over the world. And the threat alone of supercomputing is very real. I mean, it threatens our banking system, it threatens our government, it threatens everyday consumer life, right? And it's to no surprise that data centers are being built across the country, right? It's a necessity to be able to breakthrough, you know, that chasm of you know, this AI frontier. And, you know, AI isn't necessarily software per se, it's infrastructure, it's energy, and it's compute. And so there's a reason why these hyperscalers are racing for GPU capacity, right? You see Microsoft's big $120 billion spend. Project Jupiter is another great example, Meta's $72 billion project, and Google's $25 billion project in the PJM market down, you know, on the East Coast of the United States. These data centers are requiring more power and more cooling than traditional cloud. You know, when we think of the early, you know, the early innings of cloud, when, you know, Rackspace was among the pioneers of cloud infrastructure, an amazing job. And how much since Rackspace and then the adoption of AWS moving into cloud and then Microsoft and, you know, and the other big tech companies, how much they've pushed, right, the frontier of cloud infrastructure. Today, you know, we're in the world of AI and compute. And so AI is causing a redesign everywhere, right? Operators are ripping up their old plants, and because new GPUs, right, have 3-5 times more the density, a higher density. And so, yeah, I do think at the macro level, we are in a race to NAS in China, and AI has started to break the grid, not metaphorically, but literally. The demand is growing faster than our ability to generate power. I think it's probably an opportune time to, when we think about how you power data centers, we reintroduce the world of nuclear energy. You know, it's not necessarily too far etched now, given our necessities and given, you know, how much more safe nuclear energy and how much more development has poured, not only through capital, but through technological development for nuclear energy. That could potentially be a source outside of renewable energy for these massive consumers of energy. And at the end of the day, there's a bottleneck, right? There's a bottleneck that exists with power, people, and with policy. There's not enough capacity. There's not enough talent to build, to commission, and operate, because of the people carrying the subject matter experts, you know, they're in one place. They can't necessarily be in all places at once. And to train people, to train a workforce, to be able to, you know, basically pass down all that knowledge and to train someone very well to run a data center takes time, right? And how many of these are being, you know, they're popping up every month.
So a new headline almost every day, a $50 billion investment in data centers here and there. Yeah,
exactly. Yes. And, you know, many, there's also a reason, and there's a negotiation piece. There's a lot, many, you know, site rejections are happening because AI workloads have changed design requirements midstream. You know, as you know, what these companies do, I mean, these tech companies, they reach out to municipalities, right? Less so metropolitan cities, but more suburban.
Kind of like with Doniana County over here, I guess, right? I mean,
they call them and they try, you know, they try to negotiate, and simply if their needs are not met, they simply hang up the phone and move on to the next municipality until they reach a municipality that is willing to work with them. That's the fact of the matter.
I appreciate that. And I know you mentioned earlier, like that El Paso shouldn't go chasing deals, right? And that we sort of should ensure that, you know, any deal has certain, you know, benefits of the city and is, you know, well negotiated and so forth.
Yes.
I just wonder, you know, what do you think a good deal looks like for El Paso when it comes to data center coming here? And I think, I think the reality is we're probably going to see more data centers in our region, right? If maybe not right in El Paso, but in our you know, in our region, we're going to see more of these. And I guess I just wonder what does a good deal look like for our region for a data center? Is it, you know, caps on resource usage? Is it, you know, less generous tax benefits? I just wonder generally kind of from a high level what you think a good deal looks like for a data center.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I mean, here are my thoughts. If a data center wants our power, our land, our water, they should also invest in our people. Okay? So it's important for us to look at whether the deal created real long-term value, public value, that is. We all recognize the value of infrastructure in the U.S. We see it, we live it, we drive by it every day. But data centers aren't inherently good or bad, they're infrastructure. The question is, does the community get a fair return for what we're giving up? And as it relates to El Paso, I think we must diversify the economy, right? We must strengthen our neighborhoods and invest in our infrastructure and help build and retain local talent. Through that lens, data centers can play a role. But they shouldn't define the economic strategy of a border city like ours. And so we need to negotiate from a position of clarity. We need smaller and shorter incentives. We need real accountability. We need local hiring, water and energy safeguards, and meaningful participation from local firms in construction, in operations. And if we're really truly talking about what moves a needle for a region like the Borderplex, it's not the single mega projects, it's ecosystems. It's the integration and the participation of all the community to be incentivized and to participate and build an ecosystem where everyone participates. We can think of advanced manufacturing tied to nearshoring, logistics, binational supply chain, AI-enabled industries, and most importantly, innovation and entrepreneurship. And I say this because local entrepreneurship can generate the strongest long-term economic returns, because the jobs, the wealth, and the innovation stays here. So a better deal has four pillars. A better deal has four pillars. Less from the get-go, less tax abatements. We need to reduce the amount, the years of abatements, in other words, tax exemptions. We need to increase clawbacks. You know, we need to tie incentives to energy efficiency and water recycling and local workforce. Research shows that tax abatements, as I alluded to earlier, do not work to recruit businesses and employers. They are a net loss for communities. You know, one study from North Carolina State University found that almost all corporate tax incentives programs left states financially worse off. Okay. Economists and public policy experts advocate for a reevaluation of community reliance on abatements. This is something that I touched a lot upon in Wharton, where our classes on urban development and policy, right, were touched upon. Tax abatements were a huge no-go. NYC, you know, for example, then experienced large losses due to tax abatement strategies. Then the next one was places like Houston, which lost over $2 billion in the same six-year period. And then you had other places like Chicago, other cities within the state of Ohio, and, you know, and other places in the U.S. that left them with high losses every year, you know. And so I think we need just a better approach to redirect, you know, these funds. Secondly, we need to require a bring your own power. And as energy economists like Silverman noted, long-term PPAs with utilities, on-site clean power, financial collateral, and demand response participation. Why does this matter? It matters because it protects the ratepayer, it protects the grid, and it gives us predictability. And third, we need to require water reclamation. You know, there needs to be a mandated closed loop systems, that we're specifically talking, and for the purpose of this, you know, this podcast has one as far as I know. But we also need require investment in regional water infrastructure, the desalination, the reuse, brackish water, right, treatment, all those things. And as part of its company-wide goal, I saw this excerpt in Meta's website, you know, to be water positive by 2030, Meta will restore 200% of the water used by data centers to local watersheds. Diego, I don't know where they get that number from. I would love to see, you know, I would love to see the explanation, the breakdown of how do we get to 200%.
I have a lack of clarity on that as well.
Yeah, yeah. You and I, yeah. And I mean, another thing is we know that they have an excellent PR team, right? Tech companies do. But aside from that, what I'm more focused on is the local benefits, right? A data center workforce academy with EPCC, with UTEP, would be amazing. I mean, annual community investment for fund allocations, local procurement commitments, you know, for companies like Favorite, which are happening. And it's a good thing, right? We're incentivizing a company that's making data centers more efficient.
Yeah, which is a San Jose-based company. The city got some incentive or offered some incentives to come
exactly.
Kind of set up shop here.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, further education to the public about data centers is critical. You know, I think in any major city, when a major bill or a major plan or project is about to happen, they always start 3 to 4 months early in educating its constituents about the project. We need more of that, and we needed more of that, because I felt like once we heard about the Meta, it kind of went rogue. We didn't really hear about it until now. And of course, there's going to be public frustration, right? we need to start early and we need to be able to educate and hear our constituents, right? And lastly, for those, you know, that are seeking to learn more about data centers, there's a fantastic podcast called the Hawk Podcast. I don't want to butcher that. It's called the Hawk Podcast. And that is an excellent source for data centers to better understand the changing conditions within data centers happening not only at the state or national level, but the global level.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's been a change in sort of the water efficiency of some of the data centers and kind of changing dynamics within them. So I know what you mean. So you kind of alluded to like Fervorit, right? And this company that makes data center cooling solutions that the city's trying to bring here. And I think the city's to some extent trying to create an ecosystem around data centers where not just the facility itself, but, you know, companies that come here and service it or work with the data center company or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think that's an interesting strategy. You made the point that can't be sort of the sole strategy for the city and you know on the border to just rely on data centers for economic development.
Yes.
And so I wonder what you think is sort of could be a driver of economic growth and the, you know, tax revenue and the better job opportunities that we all want, right? But higher wages. And I guess kind of more broadly, like, do you think that it's our sort of economic improvement in El Paso is going to rely on bringing in outside companies? Do you think it's more, you know, trying to foster innovation and entrepreneurship, which is much easier for me to, it's easy for me to say that, right? But to actually make that a reality, you know, I don't know that, you know, do we just try to cultivate like quant traders or something? Like, I don't know, right? Like, I don't know. But yeah. I wonder your thoughts on sort of, as we all look and talk about trying to improve El Paso's economic situation, is it more, let's bring in these big corporations, or is it, let's try to do it from within and you know, improve educational outcomes and entrepreneurship and so forth? Or is it a combination of both? Like, I just kind of wonder again, like I said before, like, it's a kind of a lofty question, right? But I wonder what you think about the ideal economic driver for El Paso going forward.
Wow. I mean, I do think that is the million-dollar question.
Sure.
And I mean, this, it's a great question. I will start off by saying this. I think that I do want to make a point that in the short run, El Pasoans are getting squeezed, okay? And they're getting squeezed economically, and that's much of the frustration by the people. Higher property taxes, higher prices, regardless of the advent of tariffs. We were already on the rise for higher prices. Higher utilities, inflationary periods. And yet, you know what hasn't changed? Our wages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. People are working to go to school, and they're going to school to work, to find a job. It seems like to me the totem pole has moved further up, because it's a problem, not just in El Paso, but across the country, where people are receiving an education, but they're struggling to find a job. You know, they may be moving back to their hometown to be able to live with their parents because, one, they're not finding a job, and they don't necessarily have the means to make it on their own, right? I read an article on the Economist, or I think it was the New York Times, that spoke about the average age for first-time household buyers has been increasing steadily over the years. We're now at 40 years old. That is the 40 years old is the average age for first-time households in the United States.
Compared with maybe early 30s or late 20s, a couple decades ago, probably, right?
Absolutely. And there's a big discount. You know, you have your tios, tias, your grandma, your grandparents who were able to afford houses for a fraction of the price that today will be paying for, right? So these minimum which, you know, minimum hasn't been able to keep up with inflation. That's true. There's a big disproportion. And it's barely made even a dent, right? Some people are working multiple jobs, right? Some people are choosing whether to work just to make a living to pay the bills versus investing in themselves, right? That's huge. What I think about the approach of what, you know, what a good economic development plan looks like, it's an advanced manufacturing. It's in cross-border supply chains. When you touch nearshoring, when you touch military and the aerospace, you know, industry that's been, you know, highly talked, right? It's been circulating a lot. I like that. You know, it's growth, and it's tailored to students at UTEP who can be the our next pipeline for those jobs.
Relatively high value jobs, right?
Relatively high value jobs. Mobility for manufacturing, semiconductor adjacent logistics, AI integrated industrial capacity. I like that industry. The second one, or those industries, that is. The second one is raising the bar on our quality of life, right? Our quality of life infrastructure. So for El Paso, that means smart water policy. That means mobility and connectivity. That means a neighborhood revitalization. We need that in El Paso. You know, I love the, I'm a big East Side person. I grew up on the East Side. The East Side has been one of the fastest growing neighborhoods, you know, in the city. Can we provide more interconnectivity and more hubs within the city and revitalize our neighborhoods, right? That's important, you know? As many people start to commute, and you know where you start to see the Amazon data, the Amazon warehouse,
yeah,
you know, brought in a form of digital infrastructure. But you know what it also created? It created a workforce housing that was near the job. The world of Eastlake, the world that expanded, you know, that's outside of El Paso's like form, you know, true parameters, but it brought. Look at the growth and development. It looks like a different, totally different city.
Sure.
You know?
A lot of really nice homes and successful businesses. I mean, I think we saw LME, the kind of fancy restaurant from downtown, move out there. So, yeah.
Move out there, right. And we need more of that. You know, we need to reinvest in our neighborhoods, right? We need to reinvest in our experiences. Look at what San Antonio did. I mean, right now, with the latest mayor, newest elected mayor, Gina, a little bit of a riffraff between her and city council members about the Spurs arena. This plan of taking, uprooting the San Antonio Spurs arena into downtown, I think it's a good idea. Why? Because it creates the experiences that will incentivize the consumer to spend more time in downtown, to spend more money in downtown, and to have an experience where after work you can go grab some appetizers, a happy hour, you can go to the game. When you leave the game, you can have dinner and drinks with your friends and family. That's a full experience for the afternoon, for the evening, right? So quality of life is huge. And San Antonio was very smart about that. San Antonio in the 80s and the 70s was a town that was mostly led by the military and tourism. And they were very smart in developing and bringing Toyota. And different
and all the suppliers for Toyota as well. Yeah.
Oh my, look at you know the effects that it had. Today there are 20 Japanese companies in the San Antonio and the surrounding San Antonio area that employ 9,000 people. Huge, huge. So that's why I say that you can win. You can do good and you can do well. And my last point is about talent retention. If we can keep, you know, I'm a product of an El Paso and who boomeranged, who is from El Paso, left and is returning. You know, and I have much of a different perspective. I'm very fortunate from having lived in places like New York and Philly, places like Seattle and San Francisco, and everywhere in between and abroad, where I did grad school, where I did my undergrad, away from El Paso. But there is an opportunity for the students that come to El Paso, right, from the border, to graduate talented students, driven students, right, to come get educated at a great institution like UTEP is, for EPCC graduates to also participate in the economy, and for NMSU, even our local allies, right, our local friends, regional friends, to also do well and to fill in roles here within the region. I had the opportunity to judge, or have to judge multiple competitions for NMSU, and I always walk away impressed by the caliber of the engineers, of the students, and how, you know, how driven they are. And I think we can attract better investment experiences, opportunity, better experiences like the one discussed with San Antonio in that model for the people of El Paso. You know, if our population grows and people stay here, right? And there's several people working on, you know, to tackle that same problem. And lastly, I think there's a great opportunity that exists for EPCC. You know, a lot of people focus on reinforcing UTEP, on reinforcing the medical school, which is an absolute smart idea, and potentially bringing in a law school, right? But I would love to see a world where EPCC is targeted and revitalized. Because Austin did a phenomenal job reinforcing their community college and creating a pathway for advanced manufacturing graduates. So they train Austin Community College, you know, students on the next frontier of what, you know, of what the, of advanced manufacturing is and what this higher level technology is all about. You look at places like San Antonio, who has arguably the best community college in the country.
And a whole network with the Alamo colleges and yep.
Exactly. These institutions are critical. Why do I say this? They provide the opportunities for those with lower income. And they can provide a pathway for, if AI is coming into town, right? And you know, there will be more data centers built, which is the truth, right? Can those students that go through the pipeline, the EPCC pipeline, rise with the tide that AI will bring? A redesigning of an advanced manufacturing point or an AI component for that community, I think would make a big change.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you laying that all out. And I have one more question for you, Andy. I appreciate this time. Before I ask it, though, just give me 30 seconds. Do you think that the Deck Park idea could be El Paso's, San Antonio downtown arena?
Wow. great question. You know, I haven't done much of my homework, you know, about the Deck Plaza to give you, like, a confident answer. But I will say this. Cities, tier 4, tier 5 cities just like El Paso, in order for them to graduate and become your tier 2, and eventually it would be amazing, right? To become something much larger, need convening spaces. But again, I would probably apply the same model to the sky deck. The negotiation to a sky deck has to be one with discipline, and it has to be one that doesn't squeeze the El Pasoan. I like the idea, you know, when you have friends visit, right, El Paso, to have gathering places, right? Could the Sky Deck be that? The Deck Plaza? I don't know. Maybe. Possibly. And I see, of course, you know, there would be, you know, some great minds working on it, where, you know, you could have all the amenities, and it could be a really very entertaining place, you know, to bring people, especially after a ball game. To attract more people into El Paso, and just a growing
spur some housing demand.
Yeah. I think, you know, and especially when in this borderplex, you're talking about 2.6 million people, right? Roughly. It might be chopping the population, but between Juarez, between Las Cruces and El Paso, that's sizable, right? And you know what I would love? I would love a professional sports team. But to get to that point, you know, that's an experience. That's an arena. We would need an arena, right? An arena can be converted into massive state-of-the-art concert venues, right? And we could do more, much more things. But we need our population to grow. We need our baseline average household income to grow. We need to fix housing. We need several things. And we need a talented workforce that can then, in turn, help the economy.
A lot of things.
But we'll get there. We'll get there, right? I mean, there's a reason why, you know, the city has these 5, 10, 15, 20 plus year plans.
Sure.
But I am optimistic that, you know, we get to have much of the luxuries and much of the entertainment that, you know, we see in other parts of the country.
Yeah, and just last thing here, Andy, I've taken up more time of yours than I wanted to, but I appreciate this. So you wrote an opinion piece that we published on El Paso Matters that you mentioned too, that you said that, you know, to fuel American dynamism, Hispanic communities, especially in the Southwest, need to shift from a scarcity mindset to an abundance mindset. Right. And that stood out to me. You know, we've heard of the abundance movement, right? And just one anecdote, with the Project Jupiter project up in Doniana County, I went to a vote on that in Las Cruces, and the executive who was kind of this front company, I guess, Borderplex Digital Assets, you know, kind of the guy that has to take the, you know, answer the questions and stuff. This guy, Lana Napier, used to be an executive of Rackspace.
Yeah.
So he's there and you know, he's taken a lot of questions and criticism, right? And so afterward, I went up and talked to him. And in just a moment, we had a short conversation, but he pulled out of his bag the book Abundance by these writers, Ezra Klein and Derek Thompson, that's kind of advocating for, you know, building more things and more housing and energy infrastructure and all these different things and, you know, cutting red tape and all this stuff. And so to me, it was just a little bit of insight into the mind of this guy involved with bringing this huge data center here that's obviously very controversial. And so it just got me thinking about, you know, just this concept of abundance. And I think the tech companies think of like, hey, let's build things and let's build and you know, artificial intelligence will bring a world of abundance and all these things. And so I thought it was interesting that you were kind of talking about trying to shift the mindset similarly, I guess.
Yeah.
And so I just wonder if you could kind of just opine on that and just, you know, should we embrace this idea of abundance? Should we sort of welcome these data centers with the, as you're saying, kind of some of the, you know, strong negotiating and strong terms and all that. And yeah, I just wonder, is that the path to, you know, a better life in El Paso, do you think, is kind of embracing this abundance mindset?
Yeah, no, hey, first of all, well, thank you. Thank you for allowing me to create an op-ed. I think it's a very important topic. And secondly, there's more to come. I think it's important for El Pasoans to be more educated. And as someone who's lived in, you know, these different parts of the world and parts of the country, you know, we have a really good thing here going. And I think we can continue to build from it. I think, you know, where there is a middle path, I think that this is just a start. And I know that many El Pasoans feel like they've lost a battle with this data center, but this new age has just begun. And we should welcome the future, but shape it responsibly. And I remain optimistic about the new possibilities. I mean, I'm an optimist. I've always been an optimistic person, and I don't think that'll ever, you know, I won't ever be any different. But I remain optimistic about the possibilities of helping take shape. I think El Paso and this region is at an inflection point as we think about a renaissance of manufacturing, as we think about a renaissance of industrialism and American dynamism for the city. And I think that together we can build faster and stronger communities. And so I hope my sincere hope is to see more of our generation, and newer generations be involved and do good for El Paso. In terms of abundance, abundance doesn't necessarily mean saying yes quickly. What I meant with abundance, it meant belonging at the table with the leverage to shape the deal. An abundance mindset is agency. It's investing in productivity. It's building things that last. It's negotiating from a point of strength and believing that the region has leverage and not desperation. And how would I apply abundance to data centers? I would say that we don't necessarily reject them outright, you know. We need the compute to fuel AI, to fuel this race, the defense modernization, the biotech, the manufacturing automation. We need those things, but don't give away the store. No. Negotiate like a region that knows its value. Land, talent, proximity to Mexico, renewable potential, cross-border supply chains, those things. And yeah, should communities reject these deals? I don't think so, but they should absolutely insist on renegotiating terms that currently favor the company far more than the public. They should insist, as we spoke about, the local workforce investment, the grid protection, the water protection, smaller abatements, more transparency, which I would love to see on these deals, more workforce upskilling. There's a great organization here in town called Tech Frontier that is building on this very same mission, you know, to upskill and reskill, you know, our workforce. There's a company, Ferroret, like you mentioned, you know, who was recruited to come to El Paso, built by former NVIDIA engineers and MIT PhDs who operate out of the Bay Area. And today they split their time between San Jose and El Paso down at the Innovation Factory adjacent to the airport. You know, what they're tackling to cool systems that directly inject liquid cooling technology into the racks to minimize the increase of entropy at these racks is super important, because that optimizes what? It optimizes our electricity and it optimizes their performance. It's companies like those. They have hired, I think, about 10 El Pasoans. Their head of operations is a PhD from UTEP. The plan is to hire 10 and 20 more El Pasoans. That's job growth. And that's job growth directly for the people of Juarez, the people of El Paso, the people of Las Cruces. So at the end of the day, you know, I think what matters is the discipline of the deal, the fairness of the incentives, and the ecosystems that you build around them. That's the right approach, a measured approach. A disciplined negotiation and a broader vision. Use data centers as a foundation, okay? And build the companies around them, the workforce that feeds them, and the infrastructure that supports them. If we do that, I do think that El Paso will be among the cities that shape the next frontier of AI-driven growth in the Southwest. And for the Southwest to rise, we need to build things, data centers included. But we must build them on our terms, with our people in mind, and in ways that expand the economic capacity instead of straining it for the average El Pasoan. The question really isn't whether or not data centers are good or bad. The question is whether we're negotiating from scarcity or abundance.
Well, we'll leave it there, Andy. I don't want to trap you here in our office any longer, but I appreciate that answer and just the really thoughtful commentary and discussion on this issue that I think has become quickly one of the most important issues facing our community, right, is whether we should welcome these data centers. Do they pose a threat to our resources? Are they good for the economy? You know, all these questions I think are in the minds of a lot of people. And so I just appreciate you coming on and talking with me, even if I kept here longer than I wanted to kind of talk through all this.
My pleasure.
Cool. We'll leave it there.